You are about to listen to the on-demand or podcast version of the Naked American Songbook. Due to those pesky copyright restrictions, we can't include complete recordings in this podcast. But you can still hear me get naked before a live audience at the Naked American Songbook live debut at Lincoln Center with our special guest, the one and only Stephen Merritt. Check out our website, nakedamericansongbook.org, for some pictures and ephemera from the Library for the Performing Arts. And while you're there, check out the rest of the episodes in our feed. There are some very good things in there. Okay, I feel a song coming on. Hello, gentle, naked songbook monsters. Welcome to a rather special edition of the Naked American Songbook. I'm Julian Fleischer, and I say special because for the first time in our brief history, fretting and strutting across the stage, we recorded our show outside of the cramped, if familiar, confines of our Naked American studios. Perhaps it's no surprise that a show as highfalutin as ours would attract the attention of an institution as illustrious as Lincoln Center, but that's just what happened. The Library for the Performing Arts curator, Evan Leslie, invited us to record an episode at the library's Bruno Volta Auditorium, where we combined the library's mind-boggling collection of songbook-related ephemera with our own, now legendary, broadcast acumen to create one very special crossover episode of our show. Think of it as a kind of Hoarders meets CSI of the WNYC Studios set. The Naked American Songbook meets Lincoln Center with special guest Stephen Merritt. Now, Stephen is something of a genuine genius, if you define genius as a person who transforms the world by sheer force of their creative vision, their sensibilities, their discipline, and their religious devotion to their craft. As the mastermind behind Magnetic Fields and several other remarkable bands, ensembles, projects, books, pursuits, Stephen Merritt combines the craftsmanship of Cole Porter, the heartbreak of Roy Orbison, the polished production of Brian Wilson, the wizardly wordplay of Noel Coward, the radical redemptive queerness of Oscar Wilde, and the sheer output of Picasso into one diminutive and unique package whose trademark croaking baritone against all conventional wisdom both breaks and baffles our collective heart. Stephen's songs are often surprisingly short and devoid of any of the trappings that pop songs often use to reel us in, yet somehow he manages to evoke sentiment in us without being sentimental. He is, as he himself puts it, pointedly not poignant.
Pointedly not poignant.
I've no doubt history will add him to the short list of great writers whose work encapsulates the great American songbook. Another of whom, Harry Nilsson, wrote a song I'd like to start with. From another pointedly not poignant work, The Point, the story of a round boy in a pointed world, think about your troubles.
Sit beside the breakfast table, think about your troubles. Pour yourself a cup of tea and think about the bubbles. You can take your teardrops and drop them in a teacup. Take them down to the riverside and throw them over the side to be swept up by a current, then taken to the ocean to be eaten by some fishes. Who were eaten by some fishes and swallowed by a whale who grew so old he decomposed you. He died and left his body to the bottom of the ocean. When a body decomposes, the basic elements are given back to the ocean, and the sea does what it ought to, and soon this salty water,
not too good for drinking,
'cause it tastes just like a teardrop, and it comes
Think About Your Troubles by Harry Nilsson from the animated classic The Point. And while you're thinking about your troubles, well, you think about my troubles, interviewing the great Stephen Merritt at this special live episode of the Naked American Songbook.
I guess Elvis is in the building. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Stephen Merritt. You didn't need an applause sign when you came out.
So what other signs are there?
Well,
I see exit. We have
We can use those
signs.
Whenever you
so
want.
The audience at home can't see the applause sign or the strip sign or whatever signs you have. How do they know when to strip?
For the naked part?
Yeah.
Well, we can start doing that right now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That's the beauty of radio. Oh, my. So you have been busy lately. Let's just catch up briefly, if you don't mind.
Right. On March 10th, I will have released 50-song memoir album by the Magnetic Fields, which is 50 autobiographical songs, all true, which is not what I usually do. Usually I write in characters. For this one, I'm the character, and there's 50 songs.
The day I finally snap, everybody will clap. They'll be lining up for miles for me to slay them in the aisles.
We're going to hear more about that, but I like to talk on this show about the songs that you listen to, that you consider important to you as a person, as a human. And we're going to start with, since you sent us the list in alphabetical order, which is not unlike you.
Thank you.
A song from your favorite band, ABBA.
Well, I don't really have favorite things, but I do enjoy ABBA a great deal.
Are these people married? Is that right about ABBA, that they were spouses?
They were couples. I believe Björn and Agnetha were married and then divorced, whereas Benny and Frida were boyfriend and girlfriend and separated. But by the time of this, they are no longer couples.
Because apparently when they were recording this, both couples were coming apart.
Fleetwood or had
Mac
already.
Style.
Yes, yeah. Fleetwood Mac rumors. and ABBA had the advantage of everyone being curious about who was sleeping with whom, which was a little more interesting in Fleetwood Mac than it was in ABBA. because there was a little triangulation going on in Fleetwood Mac that didn't happen in ABBA.
Wait a second. Really?
Oh. Mick Fleetwood's autobiography is quite fun.
Do you all know about this, about the love triangle in Fleetwood Mac? I didn't realize there were... Oh, well, let's see.
Love you isn't the right thing to do.
Well, we've already gone down a super weird tangent.
Yes.
How exciting.
The wonderful thing about ABBA is there are so many super weird tangents.
Okay, well,
starting with the couture. Well,
that's a tangent if I've ever seen one. But let's talk about this song that you sent me, which is called The Day Before You Came.
Yes, it's one of the last songs that they released, and it tells a story of a banal day, bleak, filled with ennui, that happened just before the protagonist meets the addressee of the song, who is only mentioned as...
Yeah, as you.
As you.
Right.
I first heard it on ABBA's Greatest Hits Volume 2. It was played for me by a friend of mine, and the first time I heard it, I cried. Always a good sign.
Wow.
I think the first four times after that, I probably also cried.
The day before you came, is there anything we should be listening for other than
the
its
lyrics.
Obvious greatness? It must be the lyric because it's not the melody. Nobody's going to confuse that for Jerome Kern, but I'm curious, like, what is...
I disagree. It's modular. A short melodic phrase. And plays with it. And,
it does.
Yeah. And the whole point is that it is expressing the banality and boredom of her life in that dreadful period just before
you
came.
Right. I see what you're saying. So it has a performative quality.
You wouldn't want it to be a chant, but it is essentially a chant. It's all of the expressiveness is in the vocal, in the performance of the vocal, not in the melody.
Right, of course. Well...
Which does progress.
What happens later in the tune?
The arrangement changes.
It does?
Yeah, not drastically. But it still has the motorik drum machine, which definitely doesn't go anywhere, and expresses the factory-like banality of her day at the office, which is just like all of the other days at the office. She goes home, and she reads Marilyn French, or something in that style.
Oh.
You know, the women's room would have been
sure.
popular when the song was written. She gets Chinese food to go and eats it at home in front of the television. That's her day.
It's like the first reel of every Jennifer Lopez movie.
Well, it's like the first reel of every Ozu movie, the first reel of most Italian neorealist movies. It's realism.
Wow. So this is what's going on in your mind when you're... See, this is why I wanted to talk to you.
It's very cinematic. And the video consists of two people at a train station not meeting and then finally exchanging a glance, and that's it.
And that's it. So it's not a love that's consummated.
No. The love will presumably be consummated after the song.
Must have opened my front door at 8 o'clock or so. Along the way to buy some Chinese food to go. I'm sure I had my dinner watching something on TV. There's not, I think, a single episode of Dallas that I didn't see. I must have gone to bed around a quarter.
Day Before You Came, recorded just as one half of ABBA was breaking up with the other half of ABBA. Alphabetically, of course, the first pick by my guest, Stephen Merritt. Pointedly not poignant, as you say?
Pointedly not poignant, for the contrast between the implied wonderful change after you came.
It reminds me of a little bit of a song called Guess Who I Saw Today? Do you know that tune? Nancy Wilson does a killer version of
yes.
it. And it's sort of the opposite of this in that she spins a whole yarn about all these things she did and all the time waiting to find out who it was she saw.
Mm.
And of course, it's her lover.
Guess who I saw today? I saw you.
It's also pointedly non-poignant.
Right. A wonderful technique.
Of which you are something of a master, I would say.
Oh, I wish.
Oh, come on. Really? I mean, that's what I feel when I hear some of the songs of yours that I adore the most. A sense that you're flirting with that moment, but don't touch it, which makes it even more moving. If I may be so bold.
Sure, thank you.
That's my experience of it. I don't want to, you know... decide for anybody, but that's what my experience tends to be of it.
Shall we sing a duet?
But we've only just met.
You've got beautiful eyes. Shall we sing a duet? One we'll never forget.
All cliches and lies.
I've got nothing to gain by pretending. And I will love you till the end.
you named, of course, and I was hoping you would do this, a bunch of bands that I really had never heard of. And I thought that would be fun for everybody because I'm always looking to learn about new stuff. And the thing is, once I sort of looked into them, even briefly, I realized that these are bands I really should know about. Who here in the Bruno Volter Auditorium has heard of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band? Show of hands, I really need a count. Oh, so that's about, I don't know.
Eight people.
I know that they lost the doodah shortly after they came out as a band, but tell us what.
Yes, I guess it was originally Dada, and they changed it to Doodah and then dropped the doodah, so they were just the Bonzo Dog Band. And Bonzo the dog was a cartoon character that we didn't get here, but a British cartoon character.
We got a monkey, though, didn't we?
Bonzo the monkey? That was bedtime for...
Bonzo.
Bonzo, yes.
Bonzo. It was like Reagan pictures, right?
I'm trying to prove it's the way you're raised that counts. But even a monkey brought up in the right surroundings can learn the meaning of decency and honesty.
So the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, I guess, mostly did covers, is that right?
At first, they only did covers, and the song in question, My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies, is a cover from a 1930s song.
Mm-hmm.
My ambition in life is to be a Foley artist.
What's so standing in the way?
Music.
Yeah, and so much of it.
Cut!
And their versions have a certain quality.
They were actually competent to quite good jazz instrumentalists.
Mm-hmm.
Who wanted to conceal that from the rock-loving audience of the 1960s.
Ah, there you go. Well, just as an example, before we get to your song, let's listen to the Bonzo Dog Doodah's... Where does the apostrophe come? The Bonzo Dog Doodah Band's cover of The Sound of Music, just to give you a taste of how well they were hiding their skills. I mean, who doesn't want to sit around and listen to that?
It reminded me of Mrs. Miller, a singer I like quite a lot.
Oh.
Are you a Mrs. Miller fan?
I am not.
Maybe you will be later.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm sure I'm going to change a lot before this evening is over.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. Never let it fade away.
So you're a fan of My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies.
Their first single.
Their first, and it was a hit in England?
No idea.
Well, how did you find it? Once again, I'm curious where someone finds this material.
Well,
I'd like to
see. CD now. So now that things are reissued, you have no way of knowing whether they're hits without going on the Viki.
Do you go to the CD store and say, I'm looking for something in the vein of that? Are you looking for a cover of the tune and you find that version? Like, what's your...
Well, I would buy anything called My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies.
And there is the answer. Well, let's listen to My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies.
I should say that the noises in question are mostly available at the end. So,
let's
if you're going to play only part of the song, I would start halfway through.
I'm soaking what you're spilling, Steve, and we're going to listen to the whole track so we can all get a taste.
What's all that noise about?
Why, don't you know that's only my brother is practicing?
My brother makes the noises for the talkies. There's not a single noise that he can't do. I'm really not quite certain what a stork is. But if it makes a noise, then Rod does too. He makes the noise that steers make when cowboys make a swoop. He makes the noise that beards make when used for straining soup. My brother makes the noises for the talkies. There's not a single noise that he can't do. My brother can make any noise you wish, like two sea lions shouting out for fish, a horse's neigh, a donkey's bray. He's even got a noise for Lillian Gish. The only time he made a bungle was when a tiger in the jungle with a mighty roar dropped dead, with bullets in his head, and Rod mooed like a cow instead. My brother makes the noises for the talkies. There's not a single noise that he can't do. You know exactly what a popping cork is. Well, Rod can pop a pretty cork for you. He'll imitate a setter, a pheasant or a grouse. But what is even better is his noise for Mickey Mouse.
Hey, Pluto.
My brother makes the noises for the talkies. There's not a single noise that he can't do.
I wonder what Lillian Gish thought of that song.
Well, we happen to have her in the archives, so...
Oh, good.
Let's go down and find out.
I want to bring back silent film.
It will not surprise people to learn that the lead singer of that group, Neil Innes, went on to...
One of the singers, sure.
One of the singers went on to write a lot of tunes for Monty Python.
I have a song by Neil Innes that I hold dear. It's a very short song. I'll perform it now. I woke up this morning. Thank you.
That was the first of several performances in this program from my guest, Stephen Merritt. I promise the next ones will be longer. This is a special edition of the Naked American Songbook, recorded live at the New York Public Library's Bruno Volta Auditorium. Bruno Volta Auditorium! When we return, you'll find out why Stephen Merritt broke into a song about an egg.
I'm a poached egg without a piece of toast.
If you're just joining us, this is a special live taping of the Naked American Songbook recorded at Lincoln Center's Library for the Performing Arts. I am your host, Julian Fleischer, and my guest is Stephen Merritt of Magnetic Fields and many other one-man and multi-member bands. Now, in such an august and academic setting, I had to ask him, how do you define a song?
I would say that it is an accompanied vocal performance with a predetermined lyric.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Since you're a person whose life is steeped in them, you write them prolifically, you know countless more, you obviously live...
I don't even know my own. I have to look at a lyric sheet.
Fair enough, but they're in there. So what do songs mean to you? I'm trying to find out what songs mean to you.
So am I. I guess they all mean different things. Isn't that the idea?
Is there anything else you would have done with your life? Would you have laid bricks? Would you have been a... I don't know.
Foley artist. I would love to be a Foley artist.
Fair enough.
I want to make sounds. I love making sounds. I would probably have just as much fun making sounds if they were not musical sounds.
Listen to this. I think I got it. I'm a poached egg.
You're a what?
I'm a poached egg. That's it. The title of the song.
What song?
The new one you played me yesterday. Da 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 da.
Oh, that one.
I got the whole lyric worked out. You want to hear it?
Not now, Barney. I got other things on my mind.
Oh, come on, come on.
I'm not in the mood.
It's a dilly, I'll tell you. Give me a pickup.
You are a fan of a movie called Kiss Me Stupid. Is that true?
Of course. I guess it's fair to say that I'm a fan of anything with Kim Novak in it.
Oh, really?
Oh, thank you.
What is it about Kim Novak that you love so much?
She's basically David Bowie.
I'm glad you gave the plug for us, Dorothy.
She's David Bowie. I love that.
I guess she sort of is. So this... This picture is for adults only, it says. It's Billy Wilder, which of course must recommend it.
Right. The great thing about Kiss Me Stupid is that the songs are theoretically by George and Ira Gershwin. Ira Gershwin gave Billy Wilder the lyrics, which were dummy lyrics from songs that George had written and Ira hadn't. So they're as dumb as they could possibly be.
So dummy in both senses of the word.
Yes, yes.
And I know that I watched the clip from the movie where they sort of work out the tune at the piano.
Oh, yes. I'm a poached egg.
That's correct. Without toast.
I'm a poached egg without a piece of toast.
I'm a something.
A haunted house that hasn't got a ghost when I'm without you.
That's what makes it. The irregularity. That unexpected little twist.
It's ridiculous.
What do you mean, ridiculous?
I mean this whole songwriting business. What are we knocking ourselves out for? Tony Bennett, Barbara Streisand, Nat King Cole, the four freshmen. And do we ever hear from any of them? No.
And so in the movie, they can't figure out why this song isn't taking off.
Right.
You know?
Until Dean Martin has car problems and has to leave his car in their town over the weekend. So they manage to pitch their song to Dean Martin.
And
miraculously, they have a big hit.
Well, we're going to play Ella Fitzgerald's version of I'm a Poached Egg Without a Toast, because when I listened to it, I just fell in love with it. I listened to it over and over and over again last night. So these lyrics were never really meant to be heard. These were just filling in space until the real ones came along. But with the help of Ella Fitzgerald, suddenly I think it's a great tune as is. Let's listen to I'm a Poached Egg by George Nyberg.
I'm a poached egg without a piece of toast. Yorkshire pudding without a beef to roast. I'm a haunted house that hasn't got a ghost when I'm without you. I'm a mouse trap without a piece of cheese. I'm Vienna without the Viennese. I'm Da Vinci without the Mona Lisa. I'm skies without blue. When you don't hang around, I'm a kangaroo without a hop. When will you show me that as Romeo you're not a flop? I'm a Western without a hitching post. I'm a network without a coast to coast. Just a poached egg without a piece of toast each time. I'm without you. Could be Switzerland without a mountaineer when I'm without you. Like Columbus without Queen Isabel. Neiman Marcus without a thing to sell. Mr. Hilton with only one hotel. I'm what can I do? Each time you wander hither and yonder, don't know where I'm at. I only know I'm lonely, so I'm here to tell you that I'm a girlfriend without a thing to boast. Any egghead would have me diagnosed as a poached egg without a piece of toast each time. I'm without you.
I don't think that sounds like a dummy lyric. I love that lyric. That's good.
It's actually kind of within the mainstream of Ira Gershwin lyrics. It's kind of like just another rumba. Why did I have to succumba?
Right.
Can you imagine anything dumba than that rumba?
It's true. And I think it's Sondheim who comes for Ira Gershwin in one of his books about his life's work and his thoughts on these subjects. He's tough on Ira.
Ira is willing to share his first thoughts with the public. He was not a stickler for polish.
Wow, there's our pull quote. That's nice. Oh, yeah, my parents had this beautiful package with these buffet paintings in them.
Oh, do you not have the Ella Fitzgerald Songbooks box set?
Oh, so, I do. Yeah, but okay, I mean the original vinyl.
Oh, yes, yeah. Beautiful.
Pull out art pieces. And this was Nelson Riddle's magnum opus of all the songbooks that she did. It's miraculous. Uh-huh. It's the high water mark of her recording career. But we're not here to talk about my taste in Ella Fitzgerald. I just wanted to share that with you because I actually think that she makes it a winning tune. And that's part of her genius.
She does. She actually changes the melody with Beyond Recognition also, which she does all over the songbooks. I tried to learn the American Songbook by learning it from Ella Fitzgerald. Big mistake, because she doesn't sing the original melodies much of the time. She often improves on the melodies, as in that song where she's improving on George.
Really? That's yeah. Not... I'm surprised to hear that, because I always think of Ella as like the go-to person for like the platonic version of these songs. Like, this is how the ideal, like...
She may do definitive versions of the songs, but they would not look like the sheet music very much, necessarily.
Interesting, because I know it was Ira Gershwin himself who said he didn't know how good their songs were till he heard her sing them.
Uh-huh.
But maybe
that's how that works. Yes.
I guess I wouldn't either if she were to sing mine. That's an interesting point of view. Do you mean like rhythmically or note-wise?
Note-wise.
Really?
Of course, rhythmically. She's a jazz vocalist, but right. Note-wise, yeah.
Huh.
Scarlet billows, stung on the heart to spread.
Just a little sidebar here. I don't really agree with Stephen on this point. While Ella, like all jazz singers, does take occasional liberties with classic melodies, I maintain, as do countless others who care about such things, that her recordings represent in the main an irreplaceable record of what might be called this catalog's platonic ideal. Okay, back to the show. You do have a lot of theatricality in your work, there's your life in the theater. You've written, what, 3 or 4 musicals now?
4 that have been produced.
Oh my God. And I want to share with the audience a song that I wanted to listen to, which I sang when you wrote the musical Coraline to, there we are. Coraline is, of course, the terrific children's book or young adult book. I don't know. A great book by Neil Gaiman that swept the world in its popularity. And Stephen and the great David Greenspan collaborated on a musical version of it that we did downtown a bunch of years ago. That's Jane Howdy Shell playing Coraline.
8 years ago in 2009.
And this was my first exposure really to you as a human as opposed to someone that I just idolized. This was quite an experience, and I have to say it was one of the most thrilling and terrifying experiences of my life, was singing a Stephen Merritt song for Stephen Merritt, and Stephen wrote an entire musical on a prepared piano, and about a dozen toy pianos?
And one adult piano, unprepared, that happened to be so old, it was halfway to being prepared. It was a piano from the 1890s.
He wrote a terrific song called When You're a Cat. So indulge me while I play myself singing your song from the musical Coraline. You're going to hear me stepping on the keys, cat-like, which took some learning for me.
When you're a cat, you know the ways into and out of an empty flat, or falling down, the fixtures dangling at sad angles, the walls gone brown. And there's a plucky lass sleeping behind the glass. You know her when you're a cat. You see it all without detection, you're good at that. The phantom stands before the glass, without reflection, pushing her hands through it as through water, lifting out her daughter, as it were. This strange creature knows only rats and bats, and that's fine. She knows bugger all about cats, so the advantage is thine. Being a cat is divine. When you're a cat, you hide your claws in paws to be ready for combat. Her claws are long, but by the laws of evolution, they're made all wrong. I will not hesitate
to sit around and wait, licking fur.
Did you actually perform the licking fur at the end?
I didn't. I don't think I did.
No.
I think we decided that would have been too on the nose.
Uh-huh.
But it's fun watching you try to count your way through that tune because... Can you imagine?
It was fun watching you try to count your way through it too. Yeah.
That wasn't the look on your face, if I remember correctly. It was truly terrifying experience. I think Lee wanted to fire me at some point, right? Like, it was just too hard for me. Like, that song is impossible. Even now, I can't find the downbeat.
And yet, you were able to do it night after night.
Yeah, I guess.
For all 26 nights.
Yeah, I mean, true enough. But learning to sing the songs of Stephen Merritt is not something I would wish on the faint of heart. It took a lot of hard work.
Try Sondheim.
True, but honestly, that's actually harder, I think, in many ways. You couldn't even find your own downbeat there.
Right. If I had to perform it, I would look at the music and then...
Yeah, oh. Yeah. But, is that what I failed to do?
No, I'm sure you looked at the music.
But, anyway,
I think what was tough was that you had to stand on a piano while doing it not fall off.
Right.
Yeah. While playing the piano with your foot.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, showbiz.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a memory that I cherish. Even though it was brutally hard, I'm glad I did. And I thank you for the opportunity, Stephen Merritt.
Theater should be brutally hard. Nobody cares how long it takes you to learn something. Ideally, it should be as hard as possible so that you're showing off this wonderful thing you can do that nobody else can do.
Yeah, nobody else could do that.
Right. You are the only person in the world who can count off that song.
Do you like musicals?
I like some of them.
Such as? Give me one.
I like a little night music all through.
Isn't it rich?
I like Act One of Into the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
I wish
in a far-off kingdom
more than anything
lived a fair maiden, a sad young lad.
Act One of Sunday in the Park with George.
Starting on a hat, finishing a hat. Look, I made a hat.
Rocky Horror, with some lyric exceptions.
How'd you do, I see you've met.
Oh, you share that with Neil deGrasse Tyson,
yes,
one of our guests from last season.
Yes.
He came loaded for bear about Rocky Horror.
I'm sure there's other musicals I like.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd.
Oh, Sweeney Todd. I have no reservations about Sweeney Todd.
It's all Sondheim, basically, except for Rocky Horror. I didn't...
What else is one going to like? I really liked something that I don't think came to New York, which was Reanimator the Musical.
If Dr. Hill says he thought it up,
he thought it up.
It's good enough. And Dr. Hill's the doctor, and it's the final word.
As Grand Guignol musicals go, Evil Dead the Musical was cute, but would have been better as a one act, whereas Reanimator really was genius.
So yes, Stephen Merritt does like musicals. Actually, he likes them a lot. Of course, leave it to him to find for us a zombie screamer musical with lots of gore. That's Reanimator, the Musical, by Mark Nutter. Check your local listings. This special Naked American Songbook was recorded live in front of a studio audience at the Lincoln Center Library for the Performing Arts. Next, we played a little game that I call This or That. But when you play games with Stephen Merritt, well, you can be sure things get a little odd. In this game, I asked him to make a split-second decision. Will it be this or that? Or, as it often is with Stephen Merritt, neither.
Gotta be this or that.
Tell me, which do you prefer? Pete, Seeger or Townsend?
Oh, God. Well,
neither.
I guess I like Turn a bit better, although It's from that vile text that I don't approve of at all.
The Bible.
We're going to go with Townsend then? He committed fewer crimes?
I guess so.
All right.
Who said I broke beautiful guitars? Who said they were expensive? Who said I really broke them? What do you know?
I've heard that Pete Townsend auctioned off those broken guitars for various charities. Which means, I guess, that he wasn't a complete jerk.
Mm.
He always claimed that he had stolen the guitars before destroying them, but I don't know if
that's supposed to make it better?
No, more fun, I guess.
All right, sentimental. Journey or melody?
journey. It's more of a pressure on the ears than a melody, really. It's a poking.
It is a poking. I always thought of it more of like a swooping and a diving, but I can see the poking.
Never thought my heart could be so yearning.
How about Ira, Gershwin or Glass?
Well, Ira Glass would never employ me again if I said Gershwin. So, of course, Glass. I like Ira Glass. He's fun.
So
he's made me do a lot of difficult things that I don't know how to do, actually. I did a musicalization of an episode of This American Life in which I was taking the testimonial of a man who lost his religion, lost his family, lost his children, lost his wife, in the process of separating from the FLDS, a sect of the Mormon Church.
Mm-hmm.
I had to adapt his words into lyrics, which A, had to rhyme, and B, accurate paraphrases of what he said, which was emotionally wrenching.
I've lost hope, and I lost my youth, lost my church, and my hold on truth. I lost my health, I can't do 9 to 5, but I can still drive.
So I had to accurately paraphrase these things in ways that his children would be able to hear later and not think of their father as some horrible person. Which I don't think he is.
Awesome. I didn't know about that.
It was fun. And it was the president of Nunsuch, Robert Hurwitz, hearing that episode that made him think that I should do that with my own life, that led to 50 Song Memoir.
When I write my memoirs, which will be, of course, in verse, on the subject of you and how awful you are, I will be infinitely terse.
Life Ain't All Bad by Stephen Merritt from his new Magnetic Fields album, 50 Song Memoir. Coming up, I'll ask him to sing another tune from that album live for you and me and the Naked American Songbook family who came together at this special live on tape edition of the Naked American Songbook. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook, and momentarily we'll hear a live performance from my guest, Stephen Merritt. But first, when I told him in front of an audience at the Library for the Performing Arts that our special Naked American Lincoln Center debut was nearly over, he had just one urgent question.
We're not going to hear the Coconut Wireless?
Oh, we are definitely going to hear the Coconut Wireless.
Hooray!
They talk to each other by banging on coconuts. That's the... It's like a Morse code of Hawaii?
Of mythical Hawaii, right. Sure.
This was presented by the Ray Charles Singers, and when I first looked it up, it was not the Ray Charles that I thought it was going to be. I guess they were Perry Como's backup singers for years.
Uh-huh. On the Lucky Strike Hour.
For the taste that you like, light up the Lucky Strike.
Relax.
It's light up time.
Magnificent.
They are super duper white.
They are, yes, if you were expecting that other Ray Charles.
The other Ray Charles, yeah, this was not what,
you'd be surprised.
Let's hear it right now.
All day long, we get the story with
That's the fun of Foley. You have two sounds, yeah, and you construct a whole theogony around it.
Say that again?
Theogony.
Theogony? What's that mean?
It's like a cosmogony with gods.
Okay. And I'm told also that Charles Raymond Offenberg, who is the real Ray Charles, is the man who sang the Three's Company theme song.
Come and knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Where the kisses are hers and hers and his, Three's Company too.
All right, well, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask us to finish up the show with a live performance by you, because you very graciously agreed to do one.
Come and knock on our door. I'm sorry, but that's exhausted my knowledge of Three's Company.
Oh.
I've only ever saw it when I was in high school. In a hospital, next to someone in a hospital bed who had the television on, my bane of my existence, 70s television, or I guess by this point, 80s television, playing Three's Company all day long.
Did you have a morphine button or anything?
I was on morphine, in fact, so it just made it go slower. Unbearable. So even though I was on a morphine drip, I remember vividly what was on television in that fateful October of 1982.
That's the thing about trauma. Scar tissue carries more information.
Right. Yeah. They say people repress memories. Ha!
I wish.
I wish.
All right, well...
Real memories don't get repressed.
Thank you for this amazing list of songs. I feel like I got a master's in something today. But you're going to treat us to a song from the record, the 50-song memoir, if I'm correct.
I hope so.
What song number is this out of 50?
One. This is the only song I know from 50-song memoir. And it is the first song. And that's because I don't actually play any songs live. I just sing, because I'm going to have to sing 50 songs. So this is the one that I actually play on. That's why I know it.
That's why I asked for it.
Yes, and it's called Wonder Where I'm From. And it explains that I lived in so many places when I was a child that when people ask me where I'm from, I don't know what to say. In St. Thomas, barefoot beatniks bonk on a boat afloat in rum. Is it there I'm from? I wonder where I'm from. Up in Yonkers, two blocks from the Bronx, baby born about as big as your thumb. Is it there I'm from? I wonder where I'm from. Never stayed in any one place 2 years. I was made in America, 3 cheers, until Baden-Baden in the BRD, later hosing on my baby bum. Is it there I'm from? I wonder where I'm from. Rarely stayed in one place more than a year. I was made in the northern hemisphere. All the seashells talk.
tossed up on the shore contain the oceanic hum. They know where they're from. I wonder where I'm from. I wonder where I'm from.
Stephen Merritt, ladies and gentlemen. I want to assure everyone listening on the radio that Stephen, I, and our entire audience are now completely naked. We look great.
Just like Jonathan Schwartz.
The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WQXR, and WNYC Studios in New York City. John DeUva and Steve Remote at Aura Sonic recorded our live show. Yes, you heard that right. Very special thanks to curator Evan Leslie of the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. If you haven't been there, just take my word for it, go. It is amazing. And of course, my special thanks to the inimitable Stephen Merritt. No one would dare try imit him. His new album, 50 Song Memoir, is now available on Nonesuch Records. Our Naked American team includes Aaron Dalton, Ellie Smirling, Hilary Bonhomme, and Mike Shoeb. Our theme music is written and produced by me. I'm Julian Fleischer, and I remind you to register your passion for our play by sharing our show, socially media-ing us, and, of course, leaving comments which accentuate the positive wherever they may stick. Thanks for listening. Keep it naked.
Well, the first song I remember ever hating, Little White Duck.
We have some fans of Little White Duck in the audience, I hear.
I'm just a little white duck sitting in the water. A little white duck doing what he ought her. At five, I decided that this song was insulting my intelligence.
I'm going to spend the rest of the night having an anxiety attack because you've basically tilted my entire world off its axis.
I think you're having an anxiety attack because of those e-cigarettes you've been hey. Smoking behind the dumpster.
Hey. It's like that, huh?
that dumpster behind the Library of the Performing Arts.
Yeah.